If you can imagine having a lover who unconditionally loves you, just the way you are. You got gas? Fine. You got no teeth? Fine. Black, white, yellow, brown? Fine. Old, young, battered, beautiful? Fine. Angry, happy, depressed? Fine. God's always here. Well, if your lover is always here and always got arms open and always wide open and receiving, what's stopping the process? Why aren't you home free? Well, apparently you're not home free because you're a conditional lover. Well, God's an unconditional lover. And you're saying to God, look, I can really only be with you if you will make it the way I want it. Got through to one of us. It's so horrible, it really is, yes. God, if I were only 20 again, I'll love you. See, once you get into this particular love affair and you see that the only thing that keeps you from beloved is your own head trips of who you think you are and who you think you aren't and how you think it is, a lot of stuff that meant a lot to you before stops meaning so much. I mean, I don't really care if I'm bald as a billiard ball. Because God loves me. I used to be so ashamed of all my sexual weirdities. Boy, did I go out of my way to practice duplicity. And you know, now I couldn't care less. It is what it is. And when I look at you, since I'm just looking for God, all I see is God in drag. And you look at me and you say, you weirdo. I say, oh no, God, you won't get me with that. I see through that one too. Because I'm not buying it. Because I am what I am, and you are what you are. What we're talking about here are very subtly varying techniques for working with where you're stuck. One of them is taking the stuckness and using it to see the way in which you are clinging. You just understand that once you feel any suffering at all, it's because you're clinging. And you know that in your head. Suffering, clinging. No clinging, no suffering. So that you get so, the minute you start to suffer, you look to see where you're clinging. And you understand that you're trying to cling, as Stephen pointed out, to stuff that is in form, and all form changes and passes away. And Christ makes it very clear, lay not up your treasures where moth and rust doth corrupt. And Buddha says all clinging is suffering. And there we have it. Everybody agrees. So one of those strategies is where the stuff is so real, you work with the reality of it, and you say, yes, I'm suffering, and you start to open around the suffering, create a little space around the suffering, to see it for what it is, suffering, clinging, so. If you can imagine a picture frame in which there is a painting of a gray cloud. But the painter made the cloud bigger than the frame that he had, or she had. So what they did was they cut a little off the edge and they just put it in the frame, and so all there is gray cloudness, because there's no edge anymore to the cloud, so all you have is gray in a frame. And you look at it and you say, what's that? But if you used either a little bigger frame or painted a little smaller cloud, you'd see that there's a little blue sky around the edge of the cloud, and you say, oh, a cloud, what do you know? All the time I thought the universe was gray. Yeah. The cloud is the grief. The cloud is the self-pity, the cloud of the models, and that little blue sky becomes the space. The meditative techniques are designed to give you that space. And the minute there's that spaciousness, it's just another cloud. You know what clouds do in the sky? They come and they go. Every time I used to get high, I'd come down. Sort of the way of life. You go up, you come down. And the first time I'd come down, I'd think, I've lost it, I've fallen out of grace, I've blown it for this lifetime. And then the next weekend, I'd get high again. And the first 100 times, each time you come down, you think you've blown it again. You've lost it. You're never going to have it ever again. And then you arrive at a place when you stop clinging to your highs, you stop clinging to your lows. Wow, what ecstasy. I can look into the face of God. Wow. Dig this depression. Ooh. I have never seen a depression as bad as this. I don't think anybody could ever get out of this depression. There is a brand of cigarettes put out in India that many of us carried with us, just the box often. The brand is called Passing Show. It's all just passing show. Highs, lows, depressions. How real do you want it to be? One strategy is you work with it. Working with it is investing it with reality. The other strategy is you put your reality somewhere else and the whole business starts to turn into nothingness. You start to put your reality on your breath. You put your reality in your devotion to God. You put your reality in any of your yogic techniques. And all this other stuff starts to fall into perspective. See, the working with the grief has the pitfall, that is, which is a tantric technique. Working with the grief to get beyond the grief, we're going into it, has the pitfall that it's like a bottomless well and you may never get out of it because you keep feeding on it and feeding on it and feeding on it. I mean, if you thought you cried yesterday, nothing like if we go deeper how you could cry tomorrow. That's the pitfall of that strategy. The pitfall of the other strategy, of course I got grief. Oh, God. Of course I've got grief, breathing in, breathing out, is that you will push the stuff under prematurely and it will sit inside you like a festering sore, oozing horrible gases that will color everything in your life always. Want a more ugly description of it, or has that one got you? Two exciting strategies. So what we are doing here in our little mini sampling of life this week is we climb into the stuff until it's real for us. So we start to air it a little bit, open up the vents and the safety valves and get some of the gas out and get the whole thing flowing again. And then we start to change our consciousness direction, and we're starting in the other techniques too. Because if you're really good at the game, you can keep both techniques going all at once. You get closer to God, so baldness is less relevant. But you also don't make believe you got hair when you don't. And you don't make believe it's beautiful if you still think it's not beautiful. And in response to many of you and many of me who feel that our hearts aren't open enough and that we can't afford to open our hearts because everything is going to die that we touch, because anything we open our hearts to is going to die. It's going to end up in a corruption. The most profound answer to that is you can't afford not to. Just as simple as that. And the minute you appreciate the way in which suffering awakens, I guarded myself for a long time, and I could guard myself by being in this role. And then I couldn't afford it any longer. And I opened up and I fell in love. most romantic sense. Me, romantic, wow. And I couldn't have it the way I wanted it. And I suffered. And I cried and I raged and I was so miserable. And at the same moment, something in me was saying, you're alive. It's happening. Good. Sit with it. I tried to manipulate the universe to get it just the way I wanted it, and I couldn't do it. And I don't understate how it hurt. And when you don't get what you want, which is what happens when someone dies you love, when a lover leaves you, when some model you've had isn't functional, I don't say there will not be grief and there will not be mourning for your loss. And I warn you against prematurely pushing that underground. Allow plenty of time for grief. I tried very quickly to smile and say, oh, it's perfectly okay, it didn't hurt me, oh, I'm fine, because that's who I thought I was supposed to be. But it did hurt, and it kept hurting for a long time. And I had to give it plenty of space. And it's not too small. A lot of people come to me after 6 or 8 months when they've lost a loved one, and they say, I don't understand, I can't get my life going again. I said, you haven't even begun yet. Allow yourself at least 2 years to grieve. Go grieve some more. And then there comes a period where you've just gone through enough and the space starts to, that little blue sky starts to develop, and if you have a meditative awareness, with just that appreciation, you start to identify with the blue sky instead of the cloud. You flicker at first. Okay. And then you start to release. And often in the release, there is a closing of the heart because you don't want to get hurt again. And you've got to allow that. That's still part of the grief reaction. And a lot of you are still holding on to grief from previous hurts. And then comes the time when you start to realize you'd rather be vulnerable and be hurt than be living dead in the dead sense, not in the living sense. And you can't afford it, and you start to open again, and the whole cycle starts again. Until finally, you start to fall in love with love. You start to fall in love with truth. You start to fall in love with that of which form is but a reflection. You start to fall in love with God. You start to fall into love, into yourself. And then there is no coming and there is no going. And then you are on the way to merging with your beloved, and that's, to me, what the game is about. And then dying and living are just dying and living. You know, it says, before Satori, there are rivers and mountains. And in the Satori, there are no rivers and there are no mountains. And then after the Satori, there are rivers and mountains, something like that. Well, before Satori, there's dying. And there's being born. In the Satori, you're in the formless, there's nothing. And then you finish the cycle, and there is dying and there's being born, but it's all so different. It's just so. And there's finally a place where you can say so with the simplicity of so, without the psychological overlay of, when I say so, does it mean I'm too cold? Does it mean I don't have enough compassion? You can just say, so. Opening to. And you can take the simplest everyday acts and make them vehicles for tuning to the deeper ways in which you are related to the universe.